Translation purport by His Divine Grace, S.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Bhishmadeva, who was the best amongst the eight Vasus, received and welcomed all the great and powerful rishis who were assembled there, for he knew perfectly all the religious principles according to time and place. Purport. Expert religionists know perfectly well how to adjust religious principles in terms of time and place. All great acharyas or religious preachers or reformers of the world execute their mission by adjustment of religious principles in terms of time and place. There are different climates and situations in different parts of the world, and if one has to discharge his duties to preach the message of the Lord, he must be expert in adjusting things in terms of time and place. Bhishmadeva was one of the 12 great authorities in preaching the cult of devotional service, and therefore he could receive and welcome all the powerful sages assembled there at his deathbed from all parts of the universe. He was certainly unable at the time to welcome and receive them physically because he was neither at his home nor in a normal healthy condition. But he was quite fit by the activities of his sound mind, and therefore he could utter sweet words with heartily expressions, and all of them were well received. One can perform one's duty by physical work, by mind, or by words, and he knows well how to utilize them in the proper place, and therefore there are no difficulties for him to receive them, although physically unfit. Om Ajnana Trimandandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshusunmalitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Vanchakalpatrubhyasya Kripa Sindhubhyavecha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So in this chapter, the discussion is going on about the passing away of Bhishmadeva. Of course, this passing away of Bhishmadeva is not ordinary. It is greatly exalted. Generally, in our material estimation, when someone is dying, we feel kind of sad at the loss of the person who is going to die. At the same time, we don't consider dying as a greatly exalted activity. Of course, for a non-devotee, dying is not a very good activity because death means you have to take rebirth again. And that rebirth is not going to be necessarily guaranteed that it could be a human birth. Could be any of the 8,400,000 species of life. So it is not something to look forward to. And therefore it is not very exalted to experience death. But nonetheless, it's nature's arrangement. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who has taken birth, death is certain. But then there is good fortune for all living entities, especially those who are fortunate enough to get a human birth, that by the grace of the Lord himself or his empowered personalities come to awaken us from our deep slumber and show us the right path of what our actual activities are. All of us, by nature's arrangement, whether we are in human birth or any of the other species, there is always activities. Everyone is active. Nobody is inactive. So therefore, performing activities is natural. But according to the scriptures and great saintly persons who teach us the right way, especially is mentioned here by Prabhupada, that Bhishmadeva was expert in the cult of devotion. And therefore, he was establishing the principles of devotional service. And he himself, by his own example, was showing that even if physically we are in a difficult position where we cannot physically do any activities, at least As Prabhupada says, by the mind and by the words, we can still do spiritual activities. Of course, by the words means that we chant the holy name of the Lord. And when there is an opportunity, when you can speak to others, then you speak to them about Krishna. And in the mind, you remember Krishna. So therefore, these are natural activities of one who has awakened to the spiritual reality of life. And those who are in darkness, of course, they will go on minding their own business, going here, there, and everywhere without any aim. Of course, they may have some material aims, but these are not ultimate aim. The ultimate aim, as Srila Prabhupada explains to us by his transcendental teachings, is that a human goal is to achieve perfection and go back home, back to Godhead. That is the ultimate goal. Of course, we may have many smaller goals to achieve, but those goals are of no value because they may be achieved and you may get some temporary result, but those results are going to be a hindrance to you. They're not going to be an advancement to you. So, of course, as I said, passing away of Bhishma Dev is glorious, and we understand from Srila Prabhupada in the Purport that all the great rishis, sages, great personalities, they all came where he was lying on the bed of arrows in Kurukshetra at the end of the battle. And underlining word is from the whole universe. See, it wasn't just from this planet Earth, but from the whole universe, great sages and rishis and personalities were coming to see the passing away of Bhishma Dev. And of course, it wasn't that they were all gathered around and having very sadness in their eyes and just looking at a person waiting for his last breath. But there's a reason why they came. Because as Prabhupada is explaining, that Bhishma Dev is not an ordinary personality. He's one of the Vasus. In fact, Prabhupada is saying he's one of the greatest Vasus. The eight Vasus are not ordinary personalities. They're demigods. And our understanding is very clear that one who has given the position of a demigod is not an ordinary person. They're greatly elevated personalities, and they are placed there directly by the Supreme Lord to assist him in his universal management of his creation. So all the demigods in different planetary system are not ordinary people. They are actually greatly exalted devotees of the Lord. But of course, in order to execute their particular service, they are covered by yoga maya, so that they will not understand their eternal position, that they are pure devotees, they are coming from the spiritual world, and their only business is to remember Krishna and serve Krishna. Because in the spiritual world, Prabhupada says, there is only one business and only one, that is to serve Krishna and be with Krishna and remember Krishna. So there is nothing but Krishna in the spiritual world. So if these demigods are sent to the material world to take up different positions and they remember their eternal position, they will always be thinking about Krishna. And therefore, they won't be able to execute their particular responsibilities. So, of course, the Vasus were such great exalted personalities. And unfortunately, when you enter the material world, even though you may be under the yoga maya, the principal active element in the material world is this is the domain of maya. And in the domain of maya, the three modes of material nature are prominent. Mode of ignorance, mode of passion, and mode of goodness. However, it may be different planetary system, different universal areas, depending on the higher level or lower level, different modes are more prominent. So I would expect in the heavenly planets, mode of goodness is much more prevalent. Then in a middle level planetary system where we are, both mode of goodness, mode of all three, mode of ignorance, mode of passion, mode of goodness are on equal level. Then if you go further in the hellish regions, then probably mode of passion and mode of ignorance is more prominent. Nonetheless, the Vasus were somehow under the influence of these modes, and they created some offense and they were cursed. So when they were cursed, the great personality of Ganga Devi, she took it upon herself that I will not let you suffer in the material world. Although you are cursed to take birth in the material world, you will be liberated as soon as you take birth in the material world. So we understand from the story of Mahabharata that Santanu Maharaj was married to Ganga Devi. And Ganga Devi, when she was married to Santanu Maharaj, there was a condition placed on him. Don't question my activities. Of course, Santanu Maharaj was so much overwhelmed by the beauty of Ganga Devi that he was completely mesmerized by her and said, yes, whatever you say, Devi, I am okay with it, as long as you are with me. So, they were happily going on in their lives, and along came first Vasu, and Ganga, as soon as he was born, went to the holy river Ganga and immersed the child in the Ganga and liberated the child. Now, on an ordinary thinking, on our material understanding, we would think, how can a mother take a newborn child and immerse in the waters and kill? And morally, in this world, if someone does that, it is a criminal offense. First of all, you will be charged for murder. Second, they say that maybe you committed this act under the instability of your mind. You're mentally unstable. Therefore, you will probably be given some mental treatment. But nonetheless, punishment will be there. You won't be saying that even though you did it under influence of mental instability, you're forgiven. There is still punishment. But here, Mother Ganga, she took the first Vasu and immersed in the Ganga waters and liberated the Vasu as per the promise to the Vasus. And then the next one came, and the next one, seven came, and they were liberated. And the eighth one, Santanu could not handle this. So he questioned Ganga, why you are doing this? And Ganga said, I told you, don't question me. But of course, Santanu was also overwhelmed by fatherly love, I suppose. And naturally, in the material world, everyone love their children, unless you are instable up there, and then you would produce babies and then reject them, which we see that many are rejected, and you find them running, you know, in orphanages, even though they have parents, but still they are in orphanages. I can tell you this for a fact, that when we first acquired Chupati temple in Juhu, Chupati in Bombay, that was originally Lady Northcourt orphanage. And we had an orphanage there when we took over that place as a temple and established Radha Gopinath temple there. But nonetheless, the orphanage was still continued because the land was owned by the trust who were entrusted for the orphanage. So we had many children there. And generally when you say an orphan, means he has no father or mother, either they are, you know, the child, they're dead. So they become orphans. But these orphans were not just orphans because their parents were dead. Either they had both their parents, or some of them had one parent, and the other had died, or one had just dumped them, and then the woman was probably stuck with the child, and she could not maintain. So they were brought to this orphanage, and orphanage, of course, had the facilities to help them, because that is what it was set up for. Anyway, the point is that the child, they are orphans. So here, the eighth child, Vasu, who is born as Bhishmadev or Devadatta, as he was known then, was not an orphan because he had a very loving father. And he questioned Ganga, that why you are doing this? And then Ganga said, okay, I told you, do not question my activities. Whatever I'm doing, there's a purpose behind it. Of course, in hindsight, we understand now what the purpose is. But if we were at the time present, when this activity is happening, we would probably think that this Ganga Devi is a very cruel mother, because she goes and kills her newborn child. But in hindsight, we understand from scriptural references that this is not an ordinary activity. This is an activity for liberating the Vasus who are cursed to be take birth in the material world or in this planet. Anyway, so at that point, Ganga Devi told Santanu Maharaj that since you are questioning me, I will tell you that this is the reality. And now that you are questioning, I will go back to my celestial planet and I will take the child with me. Because since the child is a newborn baby, you won't be able to take care of it because in the beginning stage of a child, obviously the child requires a mother more than the father because the mother knows how to nourish and bring the child up to full growth. When the child is fully depend on his own self, then the mother says, now, okay, you can take care of yourself. But up to that point, the mother takes care. So Ganga Devi took the child to the celestial planet and trained him. And at the age of 16, she came back and presented Devadatta to Santanu Maharaj, who was so overwhelmed to see his young, handsome boy, who is not just a child now, but he is fully trained in all the principles of religion, and he understands everything, and he's the topmost Kshatriya. He is not just well-versed in the scriptures, but he's also well-versed in the art of kingsmanship, because obviously he's the son of a king, so he's going to take over the kingdom. So then, Santanu was very happy, and Bhishmadeva, was known as Devadatta, was continuing his life. At one stage, of course, when Ganga Devi came and presented Devadatta to Santanu Maharaj, then she left back again to her celestial planets. And at that time, Santanu Maharaj, as a king, went into the forest and he was hunting. And in the forest, when he was hunting, by the river, he saw a very beautiful young lady. And immediately he fell in love with her. So then he went to the father of the girl and said, I want your daughter in marriage. And the father said, I cannot give you my daughter in marriage because my daughter, when she was born, the astrologer told me and predicted that she will become the great queen. And no doubt you are a king, but the second prediction was that her child will be the king, will inherit the throne. So of course here we understand that Bhishmadev is the first son of Santanu. So naturally he will inherit the kingdom. So the fisherman said that therefore I cannot give my daughter to you in marriage. And he became very sad and very, very, very despondent about life, and he came back home and he was sitting there in his throne, and Bhishmadev saw his father in this condition, and he could not see his father in this condition. Because as a loving son, he would always like to see the father in a very happy state of mind. So he's asking the father, Father, why are you sad? And the father said, don't worry, son. You know, I don't want to burden you with this. But no. You must tell me, father. And then, of course, he found out the reason was that he wanted to marry the daughter of the fisherman. But he could not marry because there is this condition that her firstborn child would be the king. So Bhishmadev went to the fisherman and said, pleaded to him, please give your daughter to my father as his queen. And at that point, Bhishmadev took that vow that I will remain a brahmachari. I will not get married. And therefore, I will not have any children who will be the claimant to the throne. At the same time, I will not marry. Not just remain brahmacharya, but I will not marry. Therefore, I will not have any children. And when he took this vow, there was tremendous flower petals from the universe, all demigods, showering upon him, because this is not an ordinary activity. And he was blessed and given that boon that he can die at his free sweet will. Normally when we die, when we take birth, we have a certain life expectancy. And at the end of that point, we have to die. We have no choice. But Bhishma Pita was given the boon that he can die at his free sweet will. Of course, Satyavati got married to King Santanu. And later on, he took a vow and pledge that I will always protect the throne of Hastinapur. Of course, we don't have time to go into the whole Mahabharata. But as you know, that later on, you know, the three sons were born. Pandu, Dhritarashtra was the first born. Then second was Pandu. And third was Vidura. And Dhritarashtra, due to being blind, he could not be the king. So therefore, Pandu was given the kingship. But Dhritarashtra at the time was very upset. But nonetheless, he had to accept his disability. So anyway, the whole story of Mahabharata will unfold later, you know, if you study the Mahabharata. The point is that Bhishma Dev was a great person. Thereby, Prabhupada is saying he was the greatest of the Vasus. And he was trained in all religious principles. And he can receive people with great honor and respect, even though he was in disposition, lying on the bed of arrows. Now, the whole point of all the rishis, munis, great personalities, demigods, all came not just to see Bhishma Pita die, but for Bhishma Pita to give some teachings, because he is addressed here as one of the 12 great Mahajanas. So Bhishma Dev is a great Mahajana who is an exponent of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, or the understanding of the Shastra and conclusion in the spirit of devotion. And therefore one can engage in devotional principles. So at this point, Bhishma Pita is lying there. And also there is a mention in the Bhagavad Gita that great personalities, when they leave this planet, they leave the planet when the sun is in the northern hemisphere. So even though the battle of Kurukshetra was over, Bhishma was still lying there awaiting for the sun to enter the northern hemisphere. Of course, that was not the most important aspect of him waiting. He was waiting for two personalities to arrive there. One was Yudhishthira Maharaj, and the second was Krishna. Because Bhishma Dev, even though from his activities we can see that he didn't have that much closeness with Krishna, but he had great regard and respect for Krishna, and therefore Krishna was his worshipful deity. He was worshipping him. So he knew that Krishna is not an ordinary personality. He is the supreme personality of Godhead. Therefore, Bhishma wanted to wait for the arrival of Krishna. And then in the presence of Krishna, he would leave his body. So that is a perfection. In our own lives, we are also practicing Krishna consciousness. Of course, that is not our motivation, because if that's the motivation, then our devotional practice will be motivational devotional service. Our devotional service should be unmotivated. But the side benefit, Prabhupada says, is that when one takes to devotional principles and becomes a devotee of Krishna, then liberation is waiting at the doorstep with folded hands. As soon as you have finished your devotional services and satisfied the Supreme Lord, and that inevitable end comes, liberation will step in and take you back to the spiritual world as a byproduct, not as a main product. The main product is serving Krishna, satisfying Krishna. So Bhishma Dev wanted to satisfy Krishna. And what was his satisfaction? That his satisfaction was that he wanted to impart transcendental knowledge of good kingship man to Yudhishthira. Because, of course, after the battle of Kurukshetra, Yudhishthira Maharaj was now the emperor. So Bhishma Pita could not leave his body without fully satisfying himself that I am leaving the throne of Hastinapur in good hands. to that point, Duryodhan was there. And Vishvapita tried his best to correct Duryodhan from his envy towards his brothers. But he wasn't very successful in it because Duryodhan was hell-bent on destroying the Pandavas. So here, Bhishma Dev is waiting for that point when Yudhishthira would come, Krishna would come, and in the presence of Krishna, he would instruct Yudhishthira Maharaj about how to be a perfect king. Of course, Yudhishthira was already a perfect king, but there is no harm in taking advice and instructions from someone who is very highly spiritually elevated. We may be greatly elevated in our own positions, but whatever position we may be in, we are a student for life. Because they, our spiritual master and the masters beyond him are our teachers. And in front of them, we are always a student. Therefore, Yudhishthira Maharaj, although greatly learned person and understood the art of kingsmanship, still, there is no harm in learning from great Bhishma Dev. So he learned all these things and he was imparted this knowledge. And when he was fully satisfied that now that I'm leaving the throne of Hastinapur in good hands, he then paid his respects and honor to Krishna and took permission from Krishna. Can I go now? And of course Krishna gave a sign and yes, you have done your bit now. Now you go back home. Then of course Bhishma Dev left his body. That is why he's saying the passing away of Bhishma Dev is glorious. It's not an ordinary passing away because he imparted great knowledge. And of course, as we know from that point onwards, Yudhishthira Maharaj became a righteous king and he performed all the righteous activities as a king. He took care of all his citizens and make sure that all his citizens were engaged in principle of devotion. Because that is actually the ultimate duty of the king, that he makes sure that his citizens who are under his care are fully absorbed in devotional principles, are fully engaged in devotional activities. And here, we see that Yudhishthira Maharaj was performing that activities perfectly. Because one, he had the good fortune of associating directly with the Supreme Lord and learning from him, and then other great teachers. At the same time, at the point of Bhishma Dev's departure from this world, he also got great instructions from Bhishma Dev. And he executed his service perfectly to the point that when he felt that now I have done my bit, I have to now renounce my throne and give it to the next successor. And the next successor, of course, is Parikshit Maharaj. Now, Parikshit is also not an ordinary person. He is greatly favored by the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna. Because even while he was in the womb of his mother Uttara, Aswatthama was going to kill him with his Brahmastra. And of course, Brahmastra is such a weapon that it can destroy whoever it is meant to destroy. It was so precision a weapon that it will not go and destroy everything and anything in the area, specifically what it's supposed to destroy. And in this case, it was supposed to be Parikshit Maharaj, an unborn child in the womb of Queen Uttara. But Krishna had higher plans for Parikshit Maharaj. Therefore, he entered the womb of Uttara and shielded Parikshit Maharaj. And when the Brahmastra came, it could not penetrate and kill Parikshit Maharaj. And later, of course, Parikshit is born and is nurtured by the five Pandavas. And he becomes a very able person to take up the throne. At that point, Yudhishthira Maharaj says, now that you are fully trained and we have full faith in you that you will do justice to this inheritance, then they retired timely and then they went into the Himalayas and Because there is a chapter in the Bhagavatam saying the Pandavas retired timely. And of course, you can read that and understand. But the point here is that Bhishma Dev was not an ordinary person. And second point which Srila Prabhupada makes here is that great acharyas or spiritual exponents are well versed in the scriptures and understanding that they can make certain changes according to time and place. But we should not take this that anyone and everyone who is a devotee of Krishna is authorized to make changes. Only great acharyas can make these changes. And we see that Srila Prabhupada, you know, not an ordinary personality, a great, great exalted Vaishnava, empowered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he crossed the ocean. According to the Vedic principles, a sannyasi should not cross a water body. But Prabhupada did not follow that injunction. Although he was an ideal sannyasi, completely renounced, living very simply in Vrindavan Dham. But Prabhupada had a higher mission. And therefore he made an adjustment that he crossed the ocean to take the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu according to the instructions of his spiritual master to him, that you are a very learned person. And remember, this instruction was given to Prabhupada when he was a young man, when he first time met Bhaktisiddhanta in Bazaar, in that Gaudiya Math. And Bhaktisiddhanta on the roof said to him, "You are a young learned man, take this message to the English speaking world." And Prabhupada prepared and meditated on it. At the appropriate time, he said, "This is the time now." After seeking the blessings of Rupa Goswami in Radharamara temple by his samadhi, he went and crossed the ocean and established Krishna consciousness. And therefore we are fortunate enough to be recipient of this mercy. Because remember, if Prabhupada was thinking, "I am a sannyasi, I cannot cross the ocean, therefore I will not go." And if Prabhupada had followed that, then of course we would now be living in darkness of ignorance. God knows where we would be suffering in this material world. But nonetheless, the principle is that Prabhupada made changes. And he made many other changes, which sometimes seems contradictory to the Vedic injunctions. But here, it is said that a great personality, especially citing Bhishma Dev, that according to time and place, you can make certain adjustments for the higher cause of presenting Krishna consciousness, the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to elevate the fallen souls from the fallen condition to a higher level. So Prabhupada made these changes. And of course these changes, as Prabhupada says, sometimes according to different countries, different climatic conditions, different adjustments are made. So here we are in London, is right now in India, the temperature is touching somewhere like 40, 45 degrees, very hot. And in Vrindavan Dham and many other temples under the ISKCON's management, Chandan Yatra has been observed. The deity is pasted with Chandan to cool the Lord down in the hot summer. Now, can you imagine? We were like, "Hey, this is tradition." Now, we cover Radha Gokulananda with Chandan in freezing cold temperatures. Do you think it would be appropriate? It wouldn't be appropriate. So we are not observing Chandan Yatra here. Also, you know, in the tradition, as Rasamrita Maharaj was saying the other day, that all, most of the traditional temples have water tanks, water bodies associated with the temples where there are certain pastimes performed in the water tank with the Lord. So in India, They have, in Vrindavan especially, the courtyard is filled with water, nicely decorated with flowers, and then Radha Samsundar comes out in a little boat, and they have a boat festival. Now we are here, we have our water body, but we don't go and perform water pastimes for Radha Gokulananda here, for some reason or other. But I would say that because the conditions are not right or suitable for that. So someone who is a very fanatic person would say, well, you people are not doing this service to the Lord properly. You're not executing your devotional service properly. You're not allowing the Lord to enjoy his pastimes in the water body and in the boat festival. You're not pesting him, his body with chandan and cooling him down. Well, we don't need to cool down. By nature's arrangement, it's nice and cool here. Even in the peak of the summer, the temperature hardly touches 28 degrees. So it's not hot like 45 degrees and 50 degrees where literally the body begins to break down in that kind of heat. So the point is that Prabhupada made some changes, but we should be very mindful that we do not make changes willy-nilly, taking these as authorization that we can make changes. But with proper understanding of scriptures, proper understanding of elevated Vaishnavas, collectively, if they come to a change which is required according to time, place, circumstances, for the purpose of increasing our devotional service, then it is okay. Not just for our own convenience sake, but for increasing our devotional service. So that is the basic principle of understanding that great acharyas make changes according to time, place, and circumstances, and we increase our devotional service. And final point I will make here is in the last stage, Prabhupada saying here, that even though we may not be in a physical condition to perform certain devotional aspects, at least use your words carefully. And even though we may be physically able-bodied person, still, we should be very mindful of our words. Our words should be very pleasing to the recipient, that it would increase that person's attachment to Krishna, his attachment to devotees, and therefore that person, when his attachment increases to Krishna and his devotees, will make advancement in his or her life. But if as devotees we use some very crude words which will not be very pleasing, then what will happen? That person who may receive these words of unpleasantness will be hurt. And that person will then immediately feel pain. And that pain will turn into hatred towards you. And then you are the cause or an offense for the person. Because that person will feel offensive towards you because you created that atmosphere. And therefore, you will also be an offender. Therefore, we have to be very, very mindful that we do not commit offense to anyone. Especially Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, Amanina manidena kirtanya sadahari. If you want to chant the holy names peacefully, blissfully, kirtanya sadahari, continuously, then amanina manidena. Don't expect respect for oneself, but always be ready to be respectful to others. And of course, one of the ways to show respect to others is by saying sweet words. Of course, I'm saying this to you, but at the same time, it is more applicable to me than anybody else. Because I will tell you one thing, that one time I asked, running out of time, I asked Bhaktiswaro Damodara Swami Maharaj that please give me a secret of giving a good class so that when I'm giving class, I will not look a stupid, uneducated person. I'll be projecting myself as someone intelligent and someone who knows what he's talking about. And you know what he told me? He said, the best way to give a class is to give class to yourself. When you're speaking, speak to yourself. Instruct yourself. And the audience who happen to be there will be recipient of that understanding. But you're actually correcting yourself. So therefore I say that when we have to say sweet words, it's a reminder to me, myself also, that when I open my mouth, hopefully I will say some sweet words and pleasing words that will please everyone. And therefore, their devotional service will be enhanced and they will advance in Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop here.